thank you for your attention. Again, I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago. Welcome back to the City Club of Chicago. I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday weekend, whatever we want to call it. It's good to have everybody back here on such a hot summer day. But it was a great weekend for Chicago. We had a great NASCAR race. Comparatively speaking, violence was down. As every single person in this room knows, one shooting, one incident is one too many. But we always appreciate when things are getting a little bit better. And I think that is due to so many folks in this room who are all doing your part in your communities to make this city better. So hopefully everybody's, you know, hugging their kids and their loved ones a little closer, especially with all the craziness in this world and what went on in Texas. We're thinking about our friends in Texas. And just know that here in Chicago, we care about all that goes on, not only in the city, but the rest of this country. And we share this platform here at City Club to talk about so many issues, talk about so many challenges, but hopefully to really talk about solutions. And I think that's what we're going to hear about today. These are folks that actually are getting things done. And what we love also at City Clubs is collaboration of the business community, the civic community, the elected officials, the nonprofits coming together to make things happen. In that spirit, I want to mention a few folks that are in the room to help set the stage, because this, who's in this room is really what makes City Club what it is. And by the way, thanks to BMO, City Club is what it is today. There was a little thing a few years ago that some of you heard about called COVID, and we are an 123-year-old institution that is based on in-person events. So that didn't go all that well for a couple of those years, and BMO was very helpful in helping stabilize us a few years ago, and we'll never forget that. So thank you. We've got a number of great folks here. Representative LaShawn Ford is here. I think he's here at Lurie Children's Hospital. Josh Hale is here from Big Shoulders. Thank you, Josh. Sean Garrett, of course, the CEO of United Way, Metropolitan Chicago. And his board chair, Linda Coberly, is here. Linda, thank you for being here. And other board members of United Way, if you could give me a wave. I don't know every... Oh, I see a number of folks that I recognize. Thank you, Manny Flores, Dave Blowers. Nicole Hackett is here in a couple capacities. She's here often in her capacity as the Joyce Foundation, but she's here today as the wife of Daryl Hackett and, of course, the Joyce Foundation. Thank you, Nicole. I mentioned Kimberly Bears and the Mag Mile. They have a number of interns here from CEDA, C-E-D-A, bringing the next generation, which is another thing we're all about here at City Club. So thank you for thinking to bring some of the right folks here, Mag Mile. Let's see, Leon Walker is here. I think I mentioned Rashad and Cheryl. We've got such a great group of folks, and there's so many that I haven't mentioned. Our favorite ice cream artisan, Ida Nelson, is here. If you've been to City Club, you heard us talk about Ida and her incredible ice cream, and her partner, Kim Anglin, is also here. And what we're doing here is helping lift up businesses and people that are doing good things, especially when they're doing good things with their business. And that's Ida's a great example of that. So check out Ida's Artisan Ice Cream. What a great group. Thank you for allowing me to share that, because that's why we're here, to all have these conversations and keep things moving forward. What I'd like to do now is introduce a video, and I haven't introduced our panelists yet. I'm going to let the video roll, and then as that ends, I'll ask Daryl Darnell and Kimberly to join me here on the stage, and I'll introduce them after the video. So if we could, please cue the video.
Somebody would have asked me, why is this project so important to me? growing up here, I've often seen myself as somebody that wanted to be successful. But for a long time, I never thought that I could actually do that here. The Aspire Center is changing that. This place represents the power of what we can all do together.
The Aspire Center is really a place where people see their neighborhood differently. It repurposed a school building that was closed more than 10 years, that people saw as trash.
This is going to be home to a number of organizations that have all come together to help advance workforce development and economic development right here in Austin.
Having those opportunities in a community like Austin, you will break the cycle of poverty. If you're able to have what you need in your community, you'll stay there. And I would say that the Aspire Center will be just that.
This place has brought about a transformation. People are trusted because the spaces that we have created, they're open, everybody's a part of it. It's a beacon of hope in the community. That's transformation right before your eyes.
Throughout this project, I've probably worked with more than 100 organizations that have all seeded into this development on behalf of the community. United Way, they help bring other partners like BMO, the City of Chicago, the State of Illinois, and now we're entering into the era of Aspire.
What's so great about the Aspire Center is that it's here because this is what the community wanted. And it's not one person or one organization, but it's everyone doing their part to create what is going to be an amazing opportunity for this region. Because when that happens, we see success. We see the successes that you see in Austin, the successes that you see in Auburn Gresham, in Little Village, in South Chicago. When community is at the center, we have a much higher likelihood of success, and we're really proud to be part of that work here.
Great. And I'll ask our panelists to come on up to the stage as I make these introductions. So please welcome, as we roll this up, Darnell Shields is here. He's a pillar of the Austin community. He serves as the executive director of Austin Coming Together, the community quarterback, some have mentioned. Daryl Hackett is here. Daryl, welcome back. Daryl is the CEO, BMO CEO, headquartered here in Chicago, and you all know about what BMO does for this city in the partnership. And not only that, what Daryl does for many different organizations, Yard Institute, Rush, Kids for Chicago, and of course, United Way. Speaking of United Way, I'm going to hand this over to Kimberly Gunther, the Chief Impact Officer at United Way of Metro Chicago. Kimberly has been over a decade plus where this partnership has come together, and you see the results of the partnership. And I would argue that's a shining example model for what can happen in different parts of the city. So I hope you all listen in. Kimberly, I'm going to ask you to guide the conversation. I'll be back up here in a little bit later. If you have any questions, hopefully we can get a few minutes for questions. Enjoy the conversation. I'm going to move this back so hopefully you can all see. Thank you, Kimberly.
Great. Thanks, Dan. And good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Really pleased and honored to be here with Darnell and Daryl to talk about this partnership. Really, this is a conversation about community transformation, which many of you in this room have been a part of in one form or another over the last several years. But this is really about taking those thoughtful, intentional steps to collaborate in a cross-sector way, really bringing the best of what we all do to the table. And that has happened over the last 10 years between United Way, Austin Coming Together, and BMO. We started working with the Neighborhood Network in Austin in 2015. So when I say 10 years, I'm not joking. Darnell and I can talk about sort of those early meetings and how we have evolved as organizations and in this work over that time. But BMO was there at the very beginning as well as an early investor in the model. They to date have invested nearly $20 million in neighborhood networks across the region. Austin is one of 17 communities that we're working in across the city and suburbs. BMO also re-upped their commitment and their investment last November with an additional $7.5 million investment over the next 5 years, really to continue the work that we're doing and expand some of that, particularly in Auburn Gresham and Little Village. So really honored to have such an incredible partner in BMO, and I do mean partner. What you'll find throughout this conversation is none of this is transactional. This is a deep relationship between these three organizations. And I can't say enough about Darnell Shields, the visionary executive director of Austin Coming Together. Darnell has worked in Austin with his partners to bring this incredible community plan that was first conceived of, I think over 10 years ago when Austin Coming Together was founded, but then was really articulated in the quality of life plan starting in 2018. And that was the moment when Aspire was born. It wasn't born in terms of starting work on the building, but it was sort of that idea of taking a community asset, an incredible building that's over 100 years old, and turning it into something profound on a very visible corner at Central and Madison, and, you know, sparking new life. And over the last 7 years, that quality of life plan, the Austin Forward Together plan, has been implemented by so many partners in this room and across the community. So what you see here is three people in three organizations, but really representing the best of collaborative work in this city. So I think we're going to start with Darrell. So, you know, we just saw the Aspire Center. It opened on Juneteenth, so still very fresh. You might still be able to smell fresh paint when you visit. But BMO's been involved for a long time, as I said. So can you talk a little bit about the bank's support of place-based investment and why that aligns with your purpose and your community investment strategy?
Okay, happy to do that. First of all, hello, Chicago. How's everybody doing? It's Chicago. You need it. First of all, it's really great to be here. When I received the invitation to join our friends at United Way, and obviously Darnell, it's easy to jump at this opportunity. Because a lot of what we do is, it's not about getting credit for it, but it's about telling the stories so that sometimes it can become repeatable. For those of you that know us, we've changed a lot over the years. And hopefully what you know is our purpose. And every time I speak, I try to make sure that I leave a few more people really know what our purpose is. And our purpose is to boldly grow the good in business and life. And we happen to be one of the 10 largest banks here in the United States. But, you know, our purpose isn't just to do the transactions and to, you know, facilitate, the everyday movement of money. You know, we want to make a real difference. And I think that resonates with us. And it's allowed us to play such a significant role here in Chicago, but also in all the other markets that we serve. The purpose is also not new to us. We've been doing this for over 200 years. I see my friend Andrea standing somewhere in the corner here from Chicago Community Trust. But, you know, in our history, and Andrea, first of all, great work you do. We're really proud to be a founding member. Founding bank for the Chicago Community Trust, and I'm not sure that everybody knows that, but it's ingrained in us. It's in our blood. We've also been a longstanding partner with the United Way, and Sean Garrett, I know, was acknowledged earlier, but Sean has been a great leader throughout the time that we have known him here. He's made such an impact with his broader team, Kimberly and others, and we are thrilled to have been one of the first institutions that come to the table and be a partner for Neighborhood Networks. And I look at the video and I think about the conversation and I just, you know what, I'm just happy to see the progress that we've made led by really important leaders. Like at the end of the day, like Darnell's going to tell some great stories here about what really happened. And in the video, I think you saw all of us throughout at different occasions. Like, this isn't a one and done. I appreciate that we've given a certain amount of money to United Way, but to us, it's not really about the money. It's about making it sustainable and playing a real role.
Thanks, Daryl. And Darnell, how about some of those stories? Tell us how all of this came to be and really what you set out to accomplish when you started this with all of your partners in Austin.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a loaded question. And hi, everybody. I definitely want to just be thankful to be here and see so many folks in the room that I have worked with or are working with currently, and a lot of new friends that I hope to make. As you guys, you know me, you know I make friends fast. But you know what? The way all of this started, you know, first and foremost, Austin coming together, we stand on the shoulders of a lot of great leaders that came before me, came before our organization. Those are the leaders that really helped to mobilize this whole ideal of that our community, all of the change makers that exist within it, could work differently, and that we could collaborate and connect so that those things that they were working on, that even though they were doing great work, right, that seemed to always amount to small scale or small wins, they thought through partnership, right, through collaboration, that now we could actually lift that up. We could actually make a bigger, stronger impact. And, you know, I got to work with pastors and elected officials and different organizational leaders, institutions as well, in this whole process, and they brought them all to the table. This was more than almost 15 years ago that I've been there when this happened in 2010. And at that time, we really had this sort of mandate of just building relationships between all of these different organizations, leaders, agencies, so that people could acknowledge each other, what they do, right, what they've been doing well, what their challenges are, and also recognize, listen to what role they could actually play. Because once you actually acknowledge what each of these organizations are trying to do and really progressing it, you start to understand that, okay, everyone is an expert in their area. Let me allow them to do that and work with them and not be redundant and do what we do. And so that's really the basis for how our collaboration came together. We did that for a number of years, just building those relationships and helping everybody start to weave that quilt. Then comes in, you know, 4 or 5 years of doing that, comes in United Way, where we start to really work with a foundation, an organization that really saw how we were building that relation, how we were building this culture, and started to help us bring in resources. And it really took that collaboration of having community-based organizations on the ground, working with an institution, a foundation that has connection to the other sectors, right? Can do some intros, some helping us gain entree, right, to those different groups so where we could now partner and start to be able to talk about the value of our work and leverage their social capital. And that's really been one of the main things that has helped us create all of this sort of collaboration, a multi-sectoral collaboration right on the ground in our community, because we've had key stakeholders like United Way, like BMO, and others, elected officials. I notice our state representative, LaShawn Ford, in the house, going to give him a shout out as well on the ground. But it's having leadership like that at every level, whether it's government, civic, and corporate and foundation, being able to work together, but also identify where we all come to this in terms of our role and honoring each other's expertise. And that's really how we were able to cultivate this culture in our community for collaboration, and how it started to yield things like the quality of life plan, started to yield a lot of these projects coming about where it takes more than just one organization to do. It takes more than just one part of the sector to do, right? And so you can't have all of this progress without that type of unity.
Yeah, and I think that expertise that you talked about, a lot of why this works in Austin is because people are both allowed and encouraged to do what they do best. And I think through building those relationships over years, there's a lot of humility in the work in terms of people not trying to take on something that they're not good at, but really recognize that there's already somebody doing that work. And the most effective way is to build that partnership and connect those networks. Which, you know, speaking of what folks do best, Daryl, BMO is obviously a massive financial institution that has an incredible community investment arm, dedicated staff, really knowledgeable, wonderful partnering staff. But as this partnership has evolved, we've also looked at sort of different ways that BMO can be involved. So could you talk a little bit about, you know, how that relationship evolved between BMO and United Way and Austin coming together and kind of what led us to this moment where there's a bank branch within the Aspire Center?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll start with the United Way relationship. You know, so I think it's been a long time, but for a long period of time it's been important to us that we've been the number one giver here in Chicago Metroland area. And by the way, that's not just about our corporate giving, you know, as well our employees, our colleagues. Like, we really believe this. And every year we get together and one time a year we have our employee giving campaign. And every year we have over 90% participation. Last year, you know, our colleagues actually contributed $31 million of their own money. And and 11 of it, you know, more than a third of it actually went directly to the United Way. So it's a cultural thing. But the partnership's been strong and it's been growing. And since we signed up for Neighborhood Networks, we've seen the great progress. If you go back to 2019 as well, you know, there was a call and a rally call about Invest Southwest. And, you know, my predecessor, Dave Casper, for the many of you that know Dave, you know, Dave was instrumental in making sure that we had an important seat in that conversation. And what a lot of people remember is hopefully the initial flagship contribution that we made, which was, frankly, it was the largest contribution we had ever made in our history. And we really believed in wanting to make a difference and wanting to have an impact. It'd be easy for us to write checks, but because we want to have an impact, that's why we actually partner with organizations just like the United Way, who also knows how to bring into this ecosystem the other organizations and leaders that will help us play a role. And as that's continued to evolve, as Kimberly has said, look, we've re-upped as well, and we're looking forward to the next phase of the Neighborhood Networks, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, a bit later. In terms of Austin coming together and Darnell, first of all, for all the BMO, my BMO colleagues in the room, can you please raise your hand? I would put money that 90% or more of them have actually been out to the Aspire Center, and probably multiple times. And if you think about the relationship there, look, it started with philanthropy, you know, which is, you know, the way it normally starts. You know, we're now trying to help sustain. Like, we are becoming a market rate tenant, which is important as which is important, you know, as we look to, you know, support the community. But we're also in a place where we can do what we do, and that's really bringing great advice to those in the communities and help the community make real financial progress. And we're really excited about that, and we're really excited about where we're going from here.
So thinking about the market rate tenant piece. We often think about sort of that charitable investment and creating these incredible community hubs that are amazing. But, you know, what Darnell and some of his colleagues in other communities like Carlos Nelson and Auburn Gresham, what they've been able to do is think beyond that and really think about what are the economic drivers in their communities. Yes, they're in Best Southwest neighborhoods, but that's not the beginning and end of it. That is, you know, one component of what these communities need to really have these locally sustainable ecosystems. So the fact that BMO is there as a tenant, not just as a philanthropic partner in this community hub, this amazing community hub, is really critical. But it's only one piece of the work that's happening in Austin. And I think so many of us that, you know, support community development can think sort of project to project. And what's unique about this partnership is over time, it's a bundling of different types of investments and approaches and partnerships. So the investment that goes into a neighborhood network, it includes program support. So we know that those direct service programs are still incredibly important. It's capital support for buildings. It's also really importantly infrastructure support for the coalition. We've all tried to do things off the side of our desks, tried to collaborate people, worked with people simply because we knew them from other jobs or, you know, maybe we went to grad school together. I know there's a lot of that within the nonprofit sector. But it can still feel very siloed. And this was really an investment in kind of building that infrastructure so that those relationships could be solidified, so that programs can enhance each other, and that organizations are working towards this common vision. And we've seen that so strongly in Austin with the Quality of Life Plan. But we've also seen it as other projects have come to life. So the Build expansion that opened a couple of years ago, the North Austin Community Center. There's so many projects that are happening within Austin, but also as we're thinking on that market rate, thinking about the business investment. Through this partnership, we've also developed a partnership with ITW, which is another longstanding United Way partner that is building a manufacturing facility in Austin that's part of this ecosystem. So thinking about sort of the many types of investment and experiences that go into this, that's all centered on kind of this community vision. So Darnell, could you talk a little bit about working with these different types of partners that have their own business interests and working with them to get them to see that community-led vision?
Yeah, it really goes back to, you know, we talked about the Quality of Life Plan and, you know, how community has this sort of task of trying to address these ills in their community, but needing help from different sectors, needing help from government, needing help from corporate foundations. And a lot of times there's all these voices that are looking for these resources, that are approaching these different groups, right, to be able to bring those things to bear. But it's only when you can speak in one voice that organizations, all of these supporters, can really hear and really know how they need to show up. And that's one of the things that the Quality of Life Plan really helped provide our community. It took what was already going well, all the plans that were already intended to do good, and it helped synthesize it into one blueprint, right? One voice that said, this is what our community needs, and here is how a BMO can support us. Here's the role you can play that is not asking an organization like BMO or others to do something that they don't do. You're asking them to do what they actually do, and you've tailored it to where you need it. And because we had these relationships through that process with these different organizations and on the ground, it allowed us to be very intentional around the things that we started to see come to fruition in our community, like the bill that ultimately led to the Bill Center, right? This youth recreation center, family support center, because that's what the plan was suggesting, that we needed support around youth empowerment. We needed support around education, public safety, all of these things, right? And so you see these partners showing up to support those things because it's aligned. It's aligned not only with their charitable interests, it's aligned with their business interests. It's not just about charity is great and we need it. It serves as a catalyst for a lot of the things that we need to initiate and establish and do. But it doesn't sustain the way forward, right? Sustainability is making the business case. If we can make the business case around how you support community, now it becomes part of the workflow. It becomes functional, right? It has dignity and those types of things. And it builds character and it builds capacity within a community, which, in my opinion, a lot of the intelligence and expertise in these communities is untapped. It is untapped. And through this process, that's some of the things that we've seen emerge. I don't know if folks know this, but there's a lot of different development projects happening throughout our city, right? Some at varying scales of costs. Not to say that Austin is leading in that amount of investment, but one thing I do know that we're leading in terms of development, we have the most community-based led projects, development projects happening in the city of Chicago right now. And this is a community that was disinvested in for more than 50 years. You don't bring that and change that about without making that type of case with a myriad of partners, without building relationships with a myriad of partners where they see their own interests being served through helping you serve your interests. And that's really how we need to approach working.
And because Darnell won't brag on himself, I will, that number is around $100 million that has been put into Austin, invested in Austin, and led by the community. For both of you, what makes this partnership work? What makes us tick?
Wait, look, I'll start, and I'll let you give the right answer. But I actually think Darnell said this early on, right? There's roles that we all play. And I think that's important. Like, if you think about success, when I think about us at BMO, it's never really about one person. It's always about the team and how does a team come together for one purpose. You know, in our case, it's boldly growing the good and business and life. All right. Come back to that. Boldly growing the good and business and life. And, you know, in Austin, you know, like you heard Darnell tell the story in regards to what it was they were really trying to solve and speaking to one voice. Speaking with one voice is incredibly important. And a lot of the work happened early on in terms of getting alignment on what it is that we actually wanted to do. And it made it easier for organizations, not just us, but ITW and others, to figure out how we play a role doing the things that we frankly do every day.
Yeah, and I'll just share that the relationship building cannot be underestimated. Like, you cannot do this level of community development, business building, making our city better, if we are not building these threads and these strands between us. We have to understand what is good about each of us in the organizations, but also what the challenges are. I think that's one of the things that, you know, we really tried to be authentic about that. Like, it's often easy as a civic leader and as a community-based organization leader to say, hey, this is a national corporation. They should be able to show up any way that I need them to show up, and there's nothing that could get in the way of that. That's actually not authentic. There's constraints, and you have to actually show your partner that you understand that they are, and that you're willing to listen to them and try to help them figure out how do we move past that, how do we solve that, in the same way that we want them to help us move past what constraints we have, right? That's partnership. That's real partnership, and that's how it's been. That's what we've been able to do together, and we do it sitting at the table. I actually have seen a lot of BMO staff members and team members. I think I've worked with several different departments at BMO over the last 10 years in our partnership, because that's what it takes, right? I'm working with people from marketing, from the housing, from all of these different areas. If they're really reaching, right, and going deep in our community, it takes that. And I have people that I can call on if we have a problem. And they know, because I'll blow their phone up. That's literally what it is. If you're really looking to be in partnership to that degree, you know, Sean will tell you at United Way, I'll call him, he'll get a text from me at 10 o'clock at night. Because if there is a need of something that is going to prevent us, or it's going to infringe on the relationship, right? Our whole thing is not just about trying to make sure that we move the project forward, that we solve all these problems. A lot of the times our interest is really, okay, what do we got to do to be in the best interest of making sure that we maintain these relationships that we've established with our community and with our partners? Because at the end of the day, all of this revolves around people.
I'll just add, you know, blowing up people's phones for to solve things. You know, I think also what's really important about this partnership is, you know, we throw around words like transparency and strong communication. And sometimes that means Darnell also picking up the phone and saying, like, hey, this approach isn't working for us. And I think about how strong a relationship has to be, how confident you have to be to call somebody and say, you're doing this the wrong way. And, you know, like it or not, as much as we like to think about, you know, shared ownership means equal power, it doesn't. And, you know, acknowledging that, having the courage to say, I'm going to step over that invisible barrier between us that is so often rooted in resources and ideas that are, you know, put into place because folks with resources are the ones bringing them. And to say we need to do things a little bit differently, I think for us at United Way, that was the moment that our model blew up and changed into something more adaptive, more dynamic, more responsive. And, you know, we were no longer trying to do something rigid based on the conditions of collective impact or what we know from the literature of community development. It really was about how are we rolling up our sleeves together? How are we figuring out the best places to invest together and bringing folks along with us? And, you know, Darnell has come and spoken to our board, which, of course, Daryl sits on United Way's board. And, you know, it is that sort of degree of partnership where it's yes, it's transparency and it's honest communication, but it's really transparent and real honest. And I think that's also, you know, what we kind of need to normalize in this work. That aside, let's talk specifically about Aspire. $44 million project. Incredible reuse of a community asset. Talk about sort of the process from quality of life plan to Juneteenth, when that opened.
Oh, man. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that another key component that has been present in collaboration has really been our need to respond to some type of adversity, disaster, challenge, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, that journey with Emmett School started when the schools were closed in 2013, actually. quality of life plan hadn't even been created yet, but this situation rocked our community. It created a sense of devaluing who we were as a people. It helped to make many of us see us, ourselves as unworthy of the basic things that you need to thrive. And this symbol of desolation stayed in our community, torn down, abandoned for 10 years before we could actually start to work to change that. So just imagine what that does to individuals in a community, the conditioning that it does to them. So this project really became this sort of call for all of us to say, hey, if we're going to bring this plan forward, change some of the different services that are available, increase capacity around things that we need to have from an education standpoint, economic development, we need to actually impact and change our physical infrastructure, our physical assets in our community. Like, where are these programs going to go if we're going to build capacity of them? And so that project came about as an adaptive reuse project where we looked at the school and said, hey, how do we put the school back to a productive use since it's not going to be a school anymore, but can still contribute back to the community in a way that still helps us realize the benefit that we need, the dignity that we need to restore in our community. And so that's what brought community leaders to the table to really start imagining. They took advantage of the quality of life plan process to be able to work with architects, urban planners, to now start to look at, leverage their expertise combined with their own, to look at how do you reimagine this school building. And it started there, and then as we continued to grow, we had a sort of a direction. Our architect, Lamar Johnson Collaborative, got to give a shout out to them because they actually walked with our community for almost 2 years, pro bono, helping to create, bringing their concepts and their vision to life, not just for it to become ultimately this project, but as inspiration to keep the community going to believe beyond what they had already been thinking they could not do, right? And so that's what moved us into a place where we finally said, hey, we have to raise the capital to develop this site. And it was a huge undertaking to do because this was right in the midst of COVID as well coming up. But I have to say, we had this huge investment that had just happened from United Way and BMO through Invest Southwest. That commitment really helped spark and ignite folks. We had community members that put in their own money, $20,000 raised by community members that said, hey, we can do this. And then, you know, I gave a shout out to State Rep. LaShawn Ford, but he brought government in when we needed that boost from government with a $10 million commitment from the Capitol as well. And that helped to catalyze more and more partners coming to the table with financial resources, technical assistance resources. Through that and through continuously engaging and organizing with our partners in our community, we were able to break ground 10 years later after this school was closed and restore that hope.
Can I interrupt for a minute?
Please.
Thanks. Make sure this thing's working. It's not. Thank you for allowing me to interrupt. And see, I just want to check. I know we have a very engaged audience. If you do have any questions, give me a wave. And I'll come to you with a microphone, but it's going to have to be a different microphone. So, as we're figuring that out, I have one for you, and then we'll let you close out. We've got about 12 minutes left, okay?
Great.
Sound good? You're 10 years in, your work's not done, right? But it's a good success story thus far. Like I said, a model for other neighborhoods. What advice would you give each of you, the three of you 10, 12 years ago? I know it wasn't easy to get this done, and I know you all weren't in the same positions and the same funding resources and all that 10, 12 years ago. Probably took a little extra determination. What advice would you each give to yourself 10, 12 years ago? And with the idea that there's some future folks in this room that may be at the beginning of this, like we've got Blue Pacheco Cornejo here working on the Blue Azul Center, you know, a little bit other projects as we try to identify this next generation of Darnell Shields, of you know, Daryl Hackett's and Kimberly's. Like, how do we lift those folks up? And please raise your hand as they answer that question, and I'll come find you.
Well, I'll go first. I'm really living in the space of the Aspire Center, and you know, the accomplishment of doing that. And I believe one of the things that I would do differently if I could go back, I would definitely try to bring in, become more astute on development, on what it takes to actually do a redevelopment to the scale of what we've done. I think that was one of the things, you know, we were very mission driven, and you know, really had to spend a ton of time on community engagement as well as fundraising. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you're spread so thin, you don't know what you don't know. And so when you think about doing a development of an old school building or even a new construction, right, there's so many variables that we encounter as a community-based developer that I learned. And I would have loved to have even more counsel around that, more advice, more understanding of what we were taking on, because, again, it changes the efficiency and in terms of costs. It also lends to the success of being able to do the project in a more timelier fashion. So I would definitely advise, if that is an area where you don't have a lot of knowledge, I would make sure that I'm aligned with it as to the highest degree as early as possible, beyond, like, even before the pre-development phase, because you also have to think about how these buildings are going to operate, which is something we didn't actually get a chance to think about until 3 months into construction. But it's definitely, it goes without saying, like, as early as you can think about these very difficult aspects that lend to the sustainability of what you're doing, you know, don't hesitate. If you don't know it, don't wait. Bring someone in, tap a resource so that you can be equipped with the knowledge that you need as soon as possible.
I'll be quick and I'll add to it. I love Darnell's answer. For us, the answer really is run it back. And we've been thinking about that. And at the end of the day, when we walk into the Aspire Center, we take a look at it, you know, it makes us feel proud that we're helping to build stronger neighborhoods. And at the end of the day, we know that's living our purpose, and the city would be better as we build neighborhood by neighborhood. So on the run it back for us, like, we've actually been thinking about that conversation, and with neighborhood networks, like, we're looking at the next opportunities, and we're going to continue to support here in Austin, but now we're looking at Auburn Gresham. You know, we're looking at Little Village, and you know, I do think this is a success that can be replicated right here in this great city.
I would just say, everything takes 2, 3, 10 times longer than you think it will. And that's okay to stay the course. Know at the outset that this is a long-term commitment. There are going to be a lot of frustrating days. They can be a lot less frustrating if you don't hold super tightly to what a single vision of what's going to be accomplished at the end. Because while Aspire is part of the vision, so many other things have happened in Austin in the intervening time that are incredible for the overall fabric of the community. And if there was that singular focus, those wouldn't have happened. So, you know, really be flexible, kind of look at opportunities for what they are, a chance to pivot, be willing to do that, but know it's going to take a long time, and just commit to staying the course.
Thank you. I'm back here in the center of the room. I'm going to hand the microphone and ask you to introduce yourself and ask a question.
Hi, Dominique Seward, proud City Club member. Darnell, it's good to see you.
Can you
tell everyone with all these open hearts and minds what funding gaps and needs you may have that they can help you with?
You know I love you, right? Yes. So as I mentioned, you don't know what you don't know. And we didn't know that the center would go from costing us $20 million to now $44 million, to which when we closed at about $40.8 million. So there's a pretty good chunk of overage that we had to take on that we still have, about $2.5 million that we still need to raise. And, you know, also in addition to being able to actually ensure that this center delivers on the promise, right, to the community in terms of the services beyond the building, you know, we're hoping to be able to build up a operating reserve. And we believe, you know, it's standard business, right, 3 years. And so we're hoping to be able to have $1 million per year to help us do that. Because when you actually open a center like this, you start to understand what it costs to actually operate it and make it available for the community. And aside from our rents and tenants that lend to that, there's still a about $600,000 gap that we have to raise each year with that in order to ensure that this center can deliver on and become highly functional, revenue generating, and self-sustaining. So it's about $5.5 million. And just want to give a shout out that we actually received a $500,000 gift from the Crown Family Foundation. So thank you, Dominique. You guys are helping us get that down, and we would welcome others to join in. Join them.
I think you have room for more tenants as well.
Yes, right? We do.
Lots of ways to help.
Market rate only.
Premium.
And Ida, if you could make it quick, I think we have time for one more. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Ida Nelson from Ida's Artisan Ice Cream and Treats. I actually provided the ice cream for the grand opening, so I think that this
Thank
is
you.
A lovely way to connect all together. But my wonder is, as an entrepreneur from the West Side, from North Lawndale, I'm wondering how you work with and engage other local small entrepreneurs or, you know, up-and-coming businesses in the area, be it through engaging us with supporting some of the initiatives that you have to, you know, develop out your workforce development, or even do you have a space where you can provide other resources for and connection for local entrepreneurs so that we can get to a point where we are investors in, you know, Austin come together?
Yes, I feel like that was like four questions. Yes. No, but actually there is opportunity. Like, for example, you know, when we had the grand opening and we reached out to all of our local businesses and vendors, you know, we're seeing this the opportunity that the Aspire Center and these other developments provide, right, for our community. It provides us an opportunity to start to build bridges with local business where you guys can do business with us and we can do business with you all, right? And it creates more exposure for your businesses and your organizations with the community, with consumers in the area, right? Because the interesting thing is, one of the things we deal with in our community is that we have food desert. We have desert around all of these different types of businesses that we would love to come here. And so when an entrepreneur actually starts one, what they find is that they have a hard time getting people to support their business because folks in that community are conditioned to go outside of their community to get what they need. So that doesn't change overnight just because your business is now there. So we have to use these sites and create these opportunities where community members can now know that you're there, build a relationship with you through being able to take part in some of your samplings and those types of things, right? So that now they can start to think, hey, I'm going to shop local. And now we can start to help make your business more sustainable, which will allow you to stay there, right, and continue to serve us, and we can sort of reverse that. So I know that didn't quite answer every question that you asked, but I really wanted to take it as an opportunity to make sure that we mention that, because I think that's something that folks don't always think about. They just think, hey, we'll build it, and that's it. But it's very difficult for an entrepreneur that makes that leap, comes into our community to, or builds it from within the community, to be able to have it become successful without that reconditioning.
I think it's time to close us out, right?
Sure. So, do you have any?
Yeah, I just want to thank Daryl and Darnell, two just incredible visionary leaders, and kind of end on the note that, you know, in Chicago, we don't always talk about ourselves in the most flattering light. We don't think about our city in the most flattering light. But, you know, $100 million into Austin in the last couple of years is really the tip of the iceberg. And when I think about what they've been able to accomplish, what we've all been able to accomplish with this type of partnership, you know, I really think that there is nothing that we can't do. So when we're thinking about kind of those disparaging messages, know that there is this incredible work in Austin that so many people are involved in, and we can do that throughout our entire city.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you, Darnell Shields. Thank you, Daryl Hackett, and all the organizations that you're representing and all those folks behind them. United Way, thanks for the partnership in this. This is what City Club is all about, bringing together these different sectors, the business sector, the philanthropic sector, the communities, to move the city forward. So you're all doing your part. We are just here to share this platform with you all. So please come to us with more ideas, more programs. Andrea Sands is going to be back here one of these days. We've got all sorts of incredible next generation. Brendan Bowie here from the Library Foundation. I mention all these people because these are the folks who make Chicago work. So thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting City Club. Come on back. We've got Brookfield Zoo. The President of Brookfield Zoo on July 23rd. Actually, that's going to be a really fun program. Cheryl's the chair of Brookfield Zoo, so thank you, Cheryl, for your efforts there. A watershed moment, Shedd Aquarium, celebrating the momentum for their strategic plan on August 20th. So we're going a little outside of our normal range here for the summer. And we have a couple coming up that we haven't announced yet. They're going to come quickly. So keep an eye on your emails. If you're not a member, sign up. We are Chicago's most accessible club, and we welcome everybody here. And we've got great programs. Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart's coming in September. Lynn Sage Breast Cancer Collaboration is going to be highlighted in, I think, also in September. We're talking with the city budget director and CFO about a finance panel that's actually going to be in just a couple weeks. Lots more to come. Thank you all for being here. Enjoy this beautiful Chicago day. Thanks again to our incredible panelists.